first time ever, the Aldi Literary Lunch went to Northern Ireland, to Clandeboy, a spectacular house and estate just outside Belfast. It was also to celebrate the 200th anniversary of the greatest diplomat of the Victorian age, the first Marquess of Dufferin and Arva, who lived at and remodeled the house and estate at Clandeboy. His biographer, Andrew Gailey, was among the speakers. Other speakers were Robert Hardman on Elizabeth II, A.N. Wilson on The Great Exhibition, and Prue Leith on Being Old and Learning to Love It. And our first speaker is Andrew Gailey, the terrific biographer of First Marquess of Dufferin and Arva. He's been all over the papers this week because he was also housemaster to Prince William and Prince Harry. So with Prince George going to Eton, where Andrew was the vice provost, there are these pictures of William and Harry with a very youthful, good-looking Andrew Gailey in the background. He's a distinguished Irish historian. He wrote Portrait of a Muse, Francis Graham, Edward Burne-Jones, and the Pre-Raphaelite Dream. But today he's here to talk about the great Lord Dufferin. Actually, 200th birthday would be tomorrow. He was born 200 years ago in Florence. Please let welcome the author of The Lost Imperialist, Lord Dufferin, Memory and Myth-Making in an Age of Celebrity, ladies and gentlemen, Andrew Gailey.
Anyway, it's very fitting that we're all here to celebrate the birth of Frederick I, Marquess of Dufferin and Arva, in this very banqueting hall that he helped design. And there he is, looking down on us, looking rather superior. Actually, he's very envious, because he was a great man for a party. And he would much rather be down here with us than stuck up on the wall looking at us all the while. We would also have enjoyed his company because he had a kind of winning personality. He could lay on the flattery thickly, but he also was one of those people who could talk to anybody and love people from all different parts of the world because of that skill. Now, not all his birthdays were as joyous as today's celebration. On his 13th birthday, he had a wonderful afternoon because he spent the afternoon picking on the battlefield of Waterloo, picking up discarded swords and other memorabilia. But when he got home, he wrote in his diary that night, "Mama and Papa didn't realize it was my birthday. Until I told them."
Oh.
Still, that was better than his 6th birthday. There he found himself at a tender age under the care of a Mr. Walton. And Mr. Walton's education reputation was, quote, as an energetic flogger. Now, this was a birthday his mother remembered. Did she send him a present? Of course not. What she sent him was a letter of instruction, which ended rather melodramatically, that he should spare some time to think on the 1,000 ways he could do to repay her for, as she put it, the agony of your birth. Actually, mother and son became very close indeed. She was a single mother, he was a single child, but she was remarkable. She stayed looking very young all her life, and they were very affectionate with each other and quite often mistaken for husband and wife, something Dufferin never really was too agitated about. Indeed, his prime love, as he made plain all through his life, was to his mother, and built Helen's Tower in the grounds of Clandeboy as a testament to that. The best birthday was his 21st birthday. Well, it always is, but in his case, he inherited his estates. And he's a young man, very good-looking young man, wildly romantic, and devised all sorts of great schemes for Clandeboy, building a Scottish baronial castle, maybe a French chateau. It had to be made plain to him that he couldn't afford any of those. So he economized, And what does economizing mean to a young duffer? It means building only two huge lakes at Llandyboy and buying a luxurious yacht, which he then sailed down to the Crimean War, very much in the mode of a tourist. He sailed also most famously to the Arctic Circle, almost getting trapped in the ice floes, but coming back to write a bestseller, High Latitudes, which caught the eye of the attention of the British public and the eye of Queen Victoria, who always had a close interest in good-looking courtiers. However, his mother had different plans for him altogether. She didn't want him idling around at court. No, what she wanted him to do was fulfill her mission, which was, because she was the descendant of Richard Brinsley Sheridan, the Irish playwright and sometime politician, and the mission was to achieve the high office in government that had been denied her grandfather because he was simply a theatrical player. The problem is that Duffin is a hopeless politician. He hates it all. He hates the whole theatre of Westminster and the wheeling and dealing and backstabbing and so forth. He was instead a born diplomat, but because of the strength of his mother's feelings, it's not until he's 46 and she has died that he embarks on a career. Now, that career has been heard already today. I mean, what a CV. Governor General of Canada, ambassador in St. Petersburg and Constantinople, in Paris and Rome, Governor General, Viceroy of India. Wonderful CV, but also included in that were some tremendous achievements. He staved off a sectarian civil war in Syria. He, in Canada, he kept Canada British and away from the grasp of the United States. Some things don't change. Even more importantly, in the sense that the diplomats, the things that don't happen are the really important things. Even more importantly, he staved off World War I 30 years earlier, breaking out over the northwest frontier in India. By the 1890s, the British Empire was at its height, and Dufferin was a man of international renown and a national celebrity. But for all that success, it rankled, because he knew that it's not what his mother wanted. And he decided eventually he had to hit on a solution. And the solution he chose was very simple, very effective, very shameless. He would simply rewrite the past. And this became a kind of major program. First of all, he would commission a definitive biography of Richard Brinsley Sheridan. Now, any of you who know about Sheridan know that he was a rabble-rouser, he was a drunkard, he was a womanizer. All that's cut out of the book in this definitive version. Instead, we have somebody who is serious, hard-working, a public servant, almost really a Victorian. And in a sense, you see what Duffin's doing here. He, having failed all his life to live up to Sheridan, is now making Sheridan much more like himself. The second rewrite involved his mother, because they did have a falling out. They had a falling out just as Duffin was about to get married, getting married to the woman that his mother practically chose for him. Because he got a letter from his mother, and she said, "Good luck with the wedding. I won't be there. I've got married myself." Worse is to follow. He's got married to his best friend and contemporary, someone 15 years her junior. That really stuck with Duffin. That really hurt him deep. And for years, he couldn't comprehend it. But 30 years on, he sees a new opportunity. He brings together a collection of her poems and writes a foreword in which she showed that their love was unfaltering, that she always loved him, and that she loved what he had become. Complete fantasy, but of course, it's he who writes the history. And the third solution to his problem, the third prong of this strategy, was Clandeboy itself. Here at Clandeboy, he turned it into a shrine to his imperial achievements. And so you go in the Great Hall, and you see artifacts from all over his career hanging on the walls. You go up to the bedrooms, all named after his postings as a diplomat. You go outside, and rivers and streams and hills and copses are all named after him as well, in his honour. But he wanted it not just simply to be a home for Dufferin's, he wanted also to be a home for Sheridan's past. And he began commissioning the great portraits of the Sheridans, which would then go and hang in his drawing rooms. Because he has now redefined Sheridan as himself. And of course, he has become, now claimed, to be the greatest living Sheridan of them all. There is a half-life to books, and it's got shorter. Major tomes, maybe it's a year, just. Podcasts, it's barely a week. But what he has done here at Clandeboy is to create an autobiographical study in stone, and one that has lasted 200 years. Thank you.
This week's podcast was kindly sponsored by Baillie Gifford Actual Investors, who take a long-term approach to investing in exceptional companies.